Hello and welcome to season 4 of God Made Geek, Geek Made Stuff. This is one of your co-hosts, John Ross, recording a quick production note for all of you. Me and Barnes started recording season 4 a long time ago, and we've continued recording it in a bit more of a long-form format that we didn't expect to do originally. So if you hear references to things like the year 2019, or if you hear us in the same room together, not wearing masks, breathing very closely on each other next to a microphone, it's because we recorded these things a long time ago. So sit back, relax, put yourself in a little time capsule to a younger, more innocent version of the God Made Geek crew. And yeah, enjoy yourself. Welcome to season 4. Bye.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of God Made Geek, Geek Made Kingdom Hearts 3, Season 4, baby!
Yeah, we're back. It's Season 4, ladies and gentlemen. Me and Barnes, I think we're ready to do Season 4.
We are cracking into Season 4. We are now like a senior podcast, I think. We've graduated from junior status of three seasons to, this is also episode 73, so we're practically centenarians out here.
Yeah, Barnes, do you know what year we started God Made Geek, Geek Made Stuff?
I'm gonna say 1996?
The year was 2014.
2014.
I think I looked the other day and I think that's when our first episode released. So it's been 5 years of God Made Geek, Geek Made Stuff. And we're at a clip of we're at a clip of 13 episodes a year.
Heck yeah. Hey, that's more than one a month, which I think was always our baseline of like, we gotta do one a month.
That's actually a really good point. That is more than one a month. I feel like there's probably some other more prestigious podcasts out there that are producing at a slower rate. Eat Your Heart Out, Hardcore History with Dan Carlin. What's another one, Barnes? Oh, Serial. Yeah, they're doing like 6 a year. We're smoking the competition.
And you know what? We can always pull a flea bag on you guys and make season 5 in like 2028. Who knows?
I've heard multiple people make references to the fact that Fleabag releases when they want, and I just heard, when was the first season of Fleabag?
I think it was like 2013 or 2014. She went like what? 6 years, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just saw it on Amazon Prime and I was like, cool, new show.
She said the next season, well, I forget now. She said in an interview, she's like, it'd be fun if the next season was like when she's 50, like her character, but like actually when she like gets to the age of 50, not like with makeup and stuff. So maybe season 3 is in like 20 some years. I don't know.
It's like Boyhood, the TV show.
Right.
Barnes, we're here to not talk about Fleabag, and we're not here to talk about us. We're here to talk about Kingdom Hearts 3.
Kingdom Hearts the third.
The game, I think if we go back to some of those 2014, 2015 episodes, we're drooling over this game. We're talking about it.
And not only that, we probably are expecting it to be episode like 25, 28, you know, maybe like a 2017 game. Because bear in mind, the game was in development in 2013. E3 2013, we saw our first clip of an HD Sora on the beaches of Destiny Island picking up a Keyblade and knowing the game was in development. And 6 happy years later, we got what we wanted. Well, we got the game.
We should have gone back. We got the game. We should have gone back and listened to our old Kingdom Hearts episodes and just, we should have done a retrospective on our hope and excitement.
All of our predictions and stuff.
All right, pause the podcast. Pause. Wow, great episodes. For any interested listeners, you got to go back and listen to those gems. They are still uploaded today.
Yes, they are in the archive. They've made it into the maybe Hall of Fame, if you could call it that.
I think so. I mean, they haven't been deleted off of iTunes because, you know, we don't pay for the space. So yeah, I think that includes it in our Hall of Fame. Yeah. Barnes, why don't you give us the debrief on Kingdom Hearts 3? Let's get official and then we'll talk the game.
Let's do it. Kingdom Hearts 3, y'all. It was developed by Square Enix and published by Square Enix. It was directed and written by Tetsuya Nomura, the one, the only, who has been basically the lead showrunner, executive producer, the head honcho of all things Kingdom Hearts since the very first game back in 2001, 2002. So this game was in development for many, many years. This has been rumored. It has been long and long awaited. It was delayed. The release date was delayed. And finally, in January of 2019, Kingdom Hearts 3 was finally released. It is just the third Kingdom Hearts game to be released directly to a console, but I believe it is the 11th or 12th game in the series. You got to play Kingdom Hearts games on toasters. You got to play them on iPads. You got to play them on your shoe. But finally, the PlayStation 4 got its own iteration of a Kingdom Hearts game.
They skipped an entire generation of consoles. They did. Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 were PlayStation 2, and this was PlayStation 4. So if that tells you how long we've been waiting that long. Barnes, gosh, where does this game fall for us? We've covered every single Kingdom Hearts in the series to date, except for I think maybe that like the mobile game and like the browser game that you can only get access to most of the content if you actually live in Japan. What's going on for us? What are we thinking?
Well, you know, it picks up kind of where the events of Kingdom Hearts 0.2 and 2.8 come together. It's so hard to effectively recap how to get up to speed in Kingdom Hearts 3. And I think that's one of the difficulties of the games, is that it tries to bring in new people to the series. It got all this heavy advertising. I thought it was very well advertised. How it was sold, I think, is a little bit misleading, which we can get to later. But it's essentially supposed to be this culmination of characters and events and history from pretty much every single game in the series, or at least elements and principles from games in the series, such as like data, for example, and what ambiguous word that means, and just tries to deliver this absolute like confluence of ideas into one very linear story. And it succeeds in a lot of ways, and it also fell short in some ways for me as well. So I think the community in large has a very kind of like feel to it.
Yeah, it's they did so many of the things I wanted them to do while still doing so many of the things I didn't want them to do, and they took elements from past games that I loved and included them. They also took some of the worst elements of past games and they included them. I think to give the people some a little bit of context here, Barnes, you mentioned it, there's like 11 or 12 Kingdom Hearts games, but Nomura also has some weird stuff out there. I mentioned the browser-based game. It's Kingdom Hearts, is it Kai Union? Is it just called Union?
Kai. Okay, so there's three games. Kingdom Hearts Kai, Kingdom Hearts Union Cross, and Kingdom Hearts Unchained.
See, guys, we're already off the rails. We just added two more games.
And Kingdom Hearts Unchained just released some missions, actually, in the Japan-only version of the game, which is ahead of the North American version of the game, which just really was mind-blowing stuff, guys. Like, the lore continually evolves in this series, and it's just so hard to stay on top of.
This is something I have noticed. It's a flaw of Nomura's and other work he does. Final Fantasy 15 to probably be the main offender. He seems to be almost so obsessed with what comes next and what's in his brain for what's next that he doesn't seem to ever wrap up what's right in front of you. So like Final Fantasy 15 was so frustrating because you were like, I can tell there's a great story here and you're just not telling me what it is. Because you're just, I don't know, you're like off in your own la-la land of creating DLC that says what it is.
Right.
With Kingdom Hearts 3, he is simultaneously encapsulating the events of the past series entries that are good and that you want closure in. But he's also so busy trying to say like, also I'm doing this cool stuff in Union and I'm going to have Kingdom Hearts 3 chain over to what's happening in the lore of Union, that he forgot to really make any of it satisfying, which is so hard to say because, I mean, you get to the end and there's these super cool moments of characters that you've always wanted to see interacting and certain people coming into their own and you're like, yes, I've waited 12 years for this. And then it happens and then it's just like, he gives no explanation, it falls kind of flat and you're just like, nah, I'll take it because it's the closest I'll ever get, but it's not good.
Right. You're like, this was the attempt. Like, I have to take it for what it is because this was it. We already have to move on because there's 10 million other things happening. Right. And I think that's where the game Kingdom Hearts 3 gets a little disjointed, where you have this very set thing of like, okay, God, listen, do this Disney World. I'm going to give you 20 minutes of cutscenes that are Kingdom Hearts related. Then I'm going to send you to another Disney World. Okay? That's Kingdom Hearts, right? Do it.
Yes. Which is how Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 worked, but I would argue a few things here. For one, Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 are products of their time, right? I mean, they were early 2000s PlayStation 2 games that had a Disney licensing agreement on them. Like, I expected there to be a lot, well, looking back, I would expect there to be a lot of kind of shoot in Disney material. But I would argue that those games did a good job of tying the Disney material into the Kingdom Hearts material. And on top of it, the Kingdom Hearts lore story moments that you had really pushed the story forward. This one felt like they had 8 Disney worlds. They were like, we'll make the Disney worlds good. They're going to be almost completely unrelated to the Kingdom Hearts story. When we get to the Kingdom Hearts stuff, it will literally be nonsense that just keeps the story afloat until we can get to the last 4 hours of the game,
right,
where I can then put together everything I've wanted to put together. And it just...
Yeah.
I'm struggling for one. I was talking to Barnes about this before we started recording. Neither of us like doing episodes of this show where we're bashing the thing we're talking about. And I think my struggle with Kingdom Hearts 3 is I've never wanted to love something more.
Yeah.
And it gets so close to letting me love it. It's got so many good qualities and it just falls short in every single one of them where I'm just like, I would rather go back and play the first and second one all over again than play the third one all over again.
Yeah, the nostalgia factor is always so hard. And even still, people are saying it's hard to still judge Kingdom Hearts 3 for what it is because we don't have the nostalgia effect. And when you look at what Kingdom Hearts 2 was and the way that it's held on such a pedestal, we always think of the Kingdom Hearts final mix with the additional drive forms, all the secret bosses, all the extra elements that weren't actually in the original game. So Kingdom Hearts 3 has this window to be like, okay, if this DLC is jaw-droppingly magnificent, fills in these plot holes and sets us up like never before for the next installment of the series, we might then have this kind of biased opinion of the series of number 3 like we do with number 2.
Now, I will make a counter-argument to that, Barnes, in that I never played Final Mix other than like a few minutes here and there over at your place.
I got you.
My memory of Kingdom Hearts 2 is the original Kingdom Hearts 2, and that game has really tight combat. Yes, some of the scenes are a little aggressively long.
Yeah.
The story doesn't always make a ton of sense, especially towards the end and when you're 12 years old. But like, I remember it being a very solid game, and when I played it again in college, I remember it being a really solid game. But even like from a mechanical standpoint, Kingdom Hearts 3 isn't bad.
No,
got good combat, but I would say maybe the weakest in the series outside of like the like gimmicky battles of like Chain of Memories and stuff. But like for Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, and 3, like probably more electric and fluid than Kingdom Hearts 1, but also the difficulty level is just super weird in Kingdom Hearts 3. We've talked about this before if you want to touch on it.
Yeah, balancing was tough. And, you know, it's been a bash fest so far, and I really do want to focus on some of the positives and kind of, you know, make it feel good about itself here, because it's such a burden and labor of love that it's already on such a pedestal going into it where you're like, okay, this is it. This is the chosen one. This is the moment we've all been holding on to for so long. And then you play it and, you know, I went right into proud mode and a lot of people complained about balancing and how it's too easy, or, you know, there's certain broken mechanics where these moves are overpowered and this and that, that they actually patched the game and put in a critical mode that then made it way too hard. Like, you're getting one shot and like any combo just ends you. So they're still kind of like, listen, they're like overcompensating now, but to actually just go through the game is super fun. There's great mobility from Sora. You can now transform your keyblades, do combos in the moment. Like, there's more fluid kind of cutscenes into different attack mechanics. It's really fun, but it does take away some of the defensive parts of the combat where you can literally just go crazy and mash X forever and enjoy what you're seeing, but you're never having to be like, ooh, guard, counterattack, block, guard, like that's not part of this game.
I think to give it like a point of comparison, so I play on normal mode. I'm a filthy casual. filthy. In Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, I could get through most of the game just hacking and slashing, and it was a lot of fun. But both of those games have a few boss battles, a few like enemy set pieces where I have to like, I die a few times, I really have to stop and think, like, how am I going to defeat this, right? And a lot of the side games have had that, too. Kingdom Hearts 3, I remember telling you this, Barnes, the only time Sora ever blocked was when I one time had him do it on accident. I literally, at one point, forgot how to block because there was, I think, an enemy where it was helpful to block, and I was like, I'll try out the other strategy, and it literally wasn't worth it for me. It was just quicker to just outright kill them. But I didn't want to do... I tried out Proud Mode, and I was just like, this is like... Okay, now I'm dying in every battle and having to try each one over and over again.
Right.
But I... That aside, Barnes, I agree. I think we're turning this into a bash fest. Me, you, and your brother as well, Brian, we had a lot of good times with this game. Despite,
for sure.
Despite all of the missing elements. I mean, can we talk about, for one, they got Pixar Worlds, and on top of that... Far and away, the Disney worlds they give you in this game are the Disney worlds that you wanted from day one. Like, the way you imagine Tarzan's jungle as a kid is what, like, the Big Hero 6 world actually is in this one. Like, it's huge, you can explore it, there's secrets all over the place. Man, they put a lot of love and care into, like, every environment you play in the game.
Yeah, I think you could drop, like, 15 hours in the Pirates of the Caribbean world. Like...
Yeah,
you can level up your boat. You can get experience separate from your other experience. There's like 50 islands to find, buried treasure.
There's a whole like a Wind Waker-esque like find islands and explore them and get treasure on them. Like campaign mode. I'm trying to think of what some of the other ones were too. Like even the Toy Story one. Like it's everywhere from Andy's room, which everybody knows from the movies, and the street where Buzz and Woody almost get left behind in the first movie. But then they also have a brand new environment with like a toy store you've never seen before, which is super fun and creative. Like I appreciated they took all the movies they worked with, and like for the most part they really pushed the limits and like tried to come up with creative environments that you wouldn't just assume are there.
Yeah, I think they got to take some really good creative risks in some parts and with some of the worlds. I know Pixar was a little bit more difficult to work with, and it also, there were some limitations, especially I know everyone was kind of bashing the Frozen world because there was just a weird kind of feeling to that world.
Which one was that?
For Arendelle, for Frozen.
Oh, yeah. That one
has like a lot of kind of weird parts to it. But I remember in one of the interviews, it was a kind of a cool way to re-look at the characters again. One of the lead liaisons between Pixar and Square Enix said that when they got to the Monsters, Inc. world, they fixed Mike Wazowski. I guess his legs were like too far forward in the original movie. So in the game, they kind of reanimated him and made him a little bit more proportional and fixed where his legs should be. So when you see him walking around, it like makes sense, I guess. So just like those little things are like you get to kind of re-embrace the characters again and improve upon them.
Yeah.
And the voice acting was, I thought, very close, very spot on with a lot of the people. They did a really nice job with it. Did you know they actually got Colin Hanks to do Woody because they couldn't get Tom Hanks?
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's his brother. It's really good. Like, it's really
close.
Wait,
his brother or his son? Colin Hanks.
Oh, no,
is
I'm
his
sorry.
Son,
yeah, his son. His son. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's so fun. I did not realize that. Yeah, I think the only character that really stuck out as like the voice acting was not great was Flynn from Tangled.
Yeah.
Like whoever was doing him, I was just like, oh, this is just a guy they found.
Right. And then for some people, they got the original. Like they got Kristen Bell. They got Adele Dazeem. They did like.
Oh, Adele Dazeem, I love her so
she's
much.
She's so good. They got Josh Gad,
also,
you know.
I got a shout out. In the Frozen world, they literally, like, it gets to the point of the movie, aka, like, you know, they're kind of recreating it, where literally it's the part where she sings Let It Go, and they straight up, like, play the scene, like, shot for shot, like, song for song line. They play that song from the movie in the video game, but just like in the background is Sora, Goofy, and Donald watching like,
oh, look, oh, she looks angry. What's going on?
Yeah, I remember watching it and I was like, is this What's, are we just about to watch the whole movie? What's up?
It reminded me of the ad campaign for Lilo and Stitch, where they would like do classic. Did you remember those? It'd be like a classic Disney moment, and then they insert like him on the ceiling during the Beauty and the Beast song.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, Sora's here. He's been here the whole time. He's just on the other side of the mountains. Fools.
Yeah. He was there in the original movie. You just didn't notice him. You're too busy listening to a Nadine Dazelle.
Nadine Dazelle.
The Zimba Gudu.
It is just a visually stunning game. Yeah, it looks beautiful.
The whole game.
The lighting is great. It's,
and some of the boss battles, I gotta say, like, they put some love and effort into, like, every boss battle felt really unique. They clearly put a lot of time into them. None of them were especially hard, but, like, you had to attack them in a lot of different ways. And, I mean, Sora's cinematics are just, like, you know, you're at the culmination of this kid about to become a Keyblade Master, and you really feel like it. Like, you are a master of so many cool moves right away.
Yeah, totally. It's a nice little kind of departure where you could have easily been like, oh, you lost this or that, you need to... But it's like, no, like, we just want to jam, like, we just want to dive in, and that's what people wanted. And they did a really nice job of doing that. I think with the DLC coming, it's a little bit hard to judge completely, just because DLCs are now a part of, like, gaming in general. So, like, you know, with that in mind, do you kind of have, you kind of placed it before, but would you say this is in, like, the better half of the games, the worst half? Like, where does it sit overall in the series?
I'm trying to think through all of them real quick. Help me out. We got 1, 2, Chain of Memories,
Birth by Sleep, Coded, Dream Job Distance, Days.
Yeah. Oh man, I gotta be honest, I think it falls in the bottom half for me. Wow. Like, when I'm looking at 1, 2, Birth by Sleep, Days, like, those four are like the peak of the series for me for the most part. I think this kind of, it just is not a tight finish. It's not even really an end. Like, they really propped it up as the end, but you know, I'm assuming if you're listening to this point, you've either played it or you never intend to play it. But I mean, the story is going on after this. It's not really the end,
right? Which was surprising to me. I mean, I clearly thought it was some characters. Maybe it is some characters last time we'll see them in the series, but they've kind of shown over time that no one's ever truly gone away. They find a way to bring people back in or re-involve them, but it still delivered. There were so many huge moments, and I don't know how spoiler heavy we want to go, but like the reunions, the fights, the battles, the confrontations, like there's so many pairings that you were kind of waiting for or hoping for, and they hit some really good emotional beats. But most of those things I'm describing is the last 2 to 4 hours of the game, depending on how fast you play.
Yeah.
First,
absolutely.
There's 2 hours at the beginning, 20 hours of Disney, 2 hours at the end. Where it's like, this is an A game. Oh, this is a B minus C plus game. Oh, this is an A game. And then you're done with like this kind of feeling of like confusion.
Right. Now, it does look like the DLC is going to maybe add on some gameplay, maybe add some new difficulty modes, some new modes to play. Definitely is going to like add to the Kingdom Hearts lore side of the story. Barnes, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not adding any Disney worlds, correct?
No, not as far as I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
For
me, can I do my rank real quick? Is that?
Oh, please. Yeah. I'm embarrassed I didn't ask you.
No,
to do
it's okay. It's okay. You know, for me, this is in the top half of the games for me. I do think that 2 and 1 have a pretty much untouchable status at the top two. Birth by Sleep is awesome, but for me, it's number 4 overall. I enjoyed it more than Days, Dream Drop, these other games. I think that it sits at 4 because there's still that, like, the music, the visuals, like, it still pulls you in such a fun way being on a console game. That being said, I've basically said it's the worst of the console games, but those ones are kind of in a class of their own, where Days has such beautiful story writing and lore building, and, you know, but for me, it's just, it has such a, I think it does have some replayability. Once you kind of get yourself to get back into it, then you stay in it. So while I haven't gone back to the game as much as I thought I would be doing, I know if I were to go play it right now, I would enjoy myself. And at the end of the day, it's like, anytime I'm going to turn the game on and have fun, that's always a good sign.
Yeah. That's true. I do remember telling you after I was done with the game, I was like, you know, I'm done with it, and it wasn't what I wanted, but also I would play, like, yeah, I want to jump back into it and play it again. I will say that urge has dropped off a little bit since, but sure. Yeah, I'd probably put it right after Days and then right above Dream Drop Distance. So it's in the bottom half, but it's the top of the bottom half for me.
Sure. And I think if they had not made the whole game feel like a tease, if they had kind of done what they did in Kingdom Hearts 2 with the Thousand Heartless Battle, uh-huh. if they had more segmented parts, it would have made me less anxious, more like, I have to speed through all this Disney stuff because I'm not getting that big hit until I get to yep. the end. But then I'm like, oh my god, this is the end of the game. Like, I thought this was like the halfway mark or a turning point, but it's like, no, we're just gonna just railroad this end of the game yep. stuff at you.
It is a very distinct Disney part and game, like yeah. an end.
Yeah. So other than like the pacing, I think that's what shot itself in the foot the most. Mm-hmm. But it's still, I mean, overall, it's hard to give it. After all the 20 minutes of critiquing we've done, it's just because of how much I think passion, not only us but so many people in the community have for it, where it just sits in that spot of like, man, there's still more potential that you feel like you wasted, but you got to be happy with what you have, I think.
Yep, I agree. For as much as this did turn into a little bit of a bash fest of all the things it was lacking, it had a lot of great elements. I do not regret buying it. I'm glad I played through it. I'm glad we finally got to this point. And you know, knowing Nomura, you know, for all we know, 3 years from now, there could be enough DLC out that it actually like transforms it into the perfect end to the series. It's called mass affecting it, and it's not a strategy I'm a fan of, but yeah. You never know.
Well, this DLC feels like pure lore, and I feel like it could be Final Fantasy 15 type DLC where they just mm-hmm. expound upon everything for those, yeah. quote,
they're like, by the way, fans. This crucial part of the story did happen. We just didn't show it to you originally.
Right.
So. Barnes, I think we've kind of given it our final thoughts by ranking it.
Yeah.
I would love to end this episode by asking you, you know, we've gotten 15 years or so of Kingdom Hearts material. What is one Disney World that you're so happy ended up being in this game? And what is one Disney World that you were like, ah, darn it, we'll probably never get that one now?
Ooh, that is really good. I was really, really looking forward to and was really happy that Toy Story turned out the way it did. The Giga mm-hmm. machines were like a little frustrating at first, but it was really fun to just interact with the characters and be outside the house and in Andy's room and all that. One that I guess, not that I'm, well, there's one I'm really looking forward to that I hope they do, which was just recently released. I think Moana would be really fun.
Ooh.
Doing like on sea and like undersea part with like all the creatures in the deep. And like, you know, her name I'm blanking on. I think that would be a really fun world to try to move forward and try to get.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. I was gonna say I'm very happy with Toy Story as well. That was my pick. I was just like, you know, it's the original Pixar movie. It's been around since well before the first game. Like, it always felt like it should have been there, and like, that world is so easy. You get a unique Sora because he turns into a toy. You know, it's easy to make, like, you get some really unique Heartless because they're all based on toys, and like, the world just was very well done. The focus on mech battles was a little goofy, but I actually ended up enjoying those battles a lot.
Yeah. And we got introduced to Vehrom Rex, which is like,
yeah, Vehrom
a
Rex,
big deal.
I was going to say Lilo and Stitch for one I really wanted to see, but then I was like, wait, no, we had a Lilo and Stitch world. Which game was that?
Yeah, that was in, well, Birth by Sleep. You get to go into the spaceship,
right.
Yeah.
But that was, it was really Stitch World because it was in space.
Right.
I think a Lilo and Stitch World that actually has Lilo and you're in Hawaii would have been really fun. I could see a little surfing mini game, maybe a little like transition from underwater to island. But I have a feeling in the future, if they decide to go to a tropical environment, they will probably pick Moana over Lilo and Stitch. Which, as long as they play in the music video for that How Far I'll Go song, hey, I'm here for it.
Right. Hey, man, they could do that. God, they could do Coco. Yeah. Land of the Dead would be awesome.
Oh, Coco, like, would be an awesome.
That's endless. You don't even need to have the, like, have Mexico. You can just have the Land of the Dead.
Yeah. Also, people ain't, oh, man, and I'm trying to think, like, if you go back to, like, Dream Drop Distance, like, all those crazy creatures that are kind of like the family
pet,
you know?
Yeah.
But they, One world that'll probably never make it in that I think could be kind of cool, Princess and the Frog. Get that little, like,
Ooh,
Cajun
that
era.
Would be cool.
The Frog was in one of the games, wasn't he? Or did I imagine that?
I think you imagined that.
Yep, cool.
Cool. No, that would
All
be
right.
really fun.
Barnes, what are we going to do for our next episode? We actually didn't discuss it beforehand, but we do have a long list. And let me just say this before you make the decision here. I did watch the movie we were discussing.
Ooh, we could do the movie for next week?
Yeah.
Should we tease it?
I mean,
should we even say the title or should we just tease it?
I think we should because I want the people to be able to watch it and,
yeah, that's so
and
true.
Be a part of the conversation.
That's so true. Guys. All right,
ready? Three,
two, one.
It's Booksmart.
Bad News Bears.
Oh, no!
No!
Barnes, not bad. We always talk about Bad News Bears. Obviously, we're not going to cover it in this show. I was talking about the new movie we've talked about one time.
Okay. Three, two, one.
Benchwarmers.
Bad
News Bears.
Damn it.
We're going to be doing the movie Booksmart, directed by Olivia Wilde. I was about to say starring, but then I realized I only know one of the girls' names.
Oh.
It's Beanie Feldstein.
Beanie Feldstein,
Yeah, I can't remember the... I actually didn't even look up the other girl's name, but super recommend coming-of-age story, so right up me and Barnes's alley. But next week, for episode 74, you'll be getting Booksmart.
Booksmart. Thank you again to everybody for tuning in. Thank you for joining us for season 4. We hope you guys had fun with this episode. We hope you hang around for the rest of the episodes as we climb our way to 100 podcasts and then retire forever because we'll be loaded. Thank you for your donations.
Yep. Finally, we'll make all the advertising money. After the 100th
we'll
episode, all
man.
Our advertising money gets... it's syndicated and our advertising money gets vested.
exactly.
So we'll be sitting pretty then. Until then, we are stuck on contract. So we're going to bust through these next 26.
Yeah.
I love everybody who's listening. Barnes, love you.
Love
You're
you
my
too.
Man.
Love you too, man.
And goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Baby.